Views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome back to the big broadcast. Well, now joining me in the studio right now are Lisa Horn. She's the Director of Community and Social Services. Carrie Keitley, who is with the Regional Housing Coordinator for Forecast, and David Sheffield, Community Director for Greenwood Coalition. We're talking today about the Northumberland County Homeless Study. Of course, this is our live version of Consider This, heard each and every Wednesday with Rob Washburn, my co-host, who is, of course, a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. We'll have that conversation in just a moment. But as always, here is a song related to that conversation. Here are Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young with Our House on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs.
Stills, Nash, and Young from 1970 off the Deja Vu album. That is Our House. And that's what we're talking about today, definition of homeless. Now, the Canadian definition of homelessness. Homelessness is described as the situation of an individual or family without stable, permanent, appropriate housing or the immediate prospect, means, and ability of acquiring it. It's the result of systematic or societal barriers, a lack of affordable and appropriate housing, the individual household's financial, mental, cognitive, behavioral, or physical challenges, and or racism and discrimination. Now, most people do not choose to be homeless, and the experience is generally negative and unpleasant, stressful, and distressful. Welcome to the studio. Again, my guests are Lisa Horn, Director of Community Service, Community and Social Services for the County of Northumberland, Carrie Keitley, Regional Housing Coordinator for Forecast, and David Sheffield from the Greenwood Coalition. He is the Community Director for Greenwood Coalition. Welcome to the studio, folks.
Thank you.
Everybody all at once. Yes, very glad. Very glad to have you guys here. Now, we're going to be talking about the study that was done by the county. Let me read the introduction for that one for the listeners out there who haven't actually read the PDF. The study's been prepared for the for Northumberland County as one foundation for its 10-year plan for housing and homelessness, and as a resource for the community. It covers a full spectrum from market housing to services for people who are homeless or at high risk of losing their homes. The report draws on several main sources. The census and other standard data are used for overall trends in population, household, housing stock, income, and related trends. Administrative data from the county has also been used. A variety of information, especially on homeless-related issues, comes from interviews with key informants, local experts. Existing reports on related issues were reviewed. Now, homelessness is defined as we just defined it there. Some of the other issues, a summary that the organization is going to be following for specific sections adapted for the structure of the needs assessment report. So looking at housing, population and household trends, economic context and incomes, housing stock supply, prices, rents and affordability. Also, the homelessness program services, existing program services, and, of course, and needs and challenges. Welcome to the studio, you guys.
So, Dave, that was the 2013 study that was done for homelessness. The one that we're talking about tonight is the one that was just released last month that was that came from that 2013 report. And I was wondering if you could tell me a bit about the background leading up to this new study that was released last month.
Okay, well, I can sort of start with that. The need to do a 10-year housing and homelessness plan was something that was legislated to all service managers across the province. So we all got together in our communities and worked with consultations with the community to develop those 10-year plans. And from there, we began to look at how we can start meeting some of those objectives. And that's where we start to engage with the Central East Lynn, and that brought into an opportunity to work with Carrie through Forecast, which started leading to how we can start measuring homelessness in this area and how do we want to start tackling it as a community and meeting some of those objectives.
So that's really interesting. You mentioned a Lynn and you mentioned Forecast. Maybe you could refresh our memory of what the Lynn is and the Forecast and why those two organizations to start with.
Okay. Well, what was really interesting in this, when we did our 10-year housing and homelessness plan in Northumberland County, the Central East Lynn was very interested in what the service managers in the area were doing. So they were looking at Peterborough's plan, they were looking at Durham Region's plan, and essentially recognizing that all of our service plans were saying that we needed to work better with the healthcare providers and the funders of those healthcare programs, and the Lynn was going to be a key partner in that. So they actually reached out to us. Our Central East reached out to the service managers in the Central East area and said, let's get together and start talking about what are the planning cycles and what are the priorities and how do we start collaborating in a way that we can start moving resources and money and things into those areas.
But that seems strange. We're talking about a hospital and you're talking about homelessness. Can you draw the line between those two things and why they're related? Because on the surface, that might not seem reasonable.
Well, I think a lot of the things that we were talking about when we were finding the folks that we were dealing with had a lot of health issues, and there was a lot of reasons through mental health, addictions, through physical, not having a primary health care provider. A number of things were causing people to, you know, we were seeing they were experiencing homelessness or they were at risk, they were unable to move forward in their lives, and we were trying to figure out ways that we can start helping people where they're at and moving them forward.
So where does Forecast then fit into all this?
Well, interestingly enough, Forecast works closely with the Ministry of Health to deliver addiction services across the larger region. So across Peterborough, Northumberland, City of Cortha Lakes and Haliburton. And so our role through the years has been to connect the substance use and change around substance use prevention to health. But in the last 5 to 10 years in Peterborough, Forecast has started to become engaged in how do we provide and contribute to solutions around homelessness. And so because we have a close relationship with the local health integration network, they're our Ministry of Health funder, we were just an easy way to get money into the community to help build capacity for a homelessness response that was improved or different, more coordinated across the area.
I'm starting to get the perception that there's a direct correlation between homelessness and mental health and or addiction. But those aren't the primary drivers, are they?
Not necessarily. When you look at the research, the only piece of evidence that we can point to that precludes someone's homelessness, so the only cause would be a previous episode of homelessness. Mm-hmm. So because you're homeless doesn't necessarily mean that you have an addiction or that you have a mental illness or that you have any specific qualities, but we only know that the only predictor is a previous episode of homelessness. So while Forecast is working on homelessness programs and redesigning systems, we're just one contributor to the system. We're not the primary driver or the largest population that's being served.
Now, you said that they looked at Peterborough and Durham and Northumberland counties for their particular strategies. How different were those strategies or how similar were they?
Well, right now, they're fairly different because in the last 5 to 10 years in Canada, there's been a kind of redirection of how we provide service and what the framework is for how we provide high-quality service to people who are experiencing chronic homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so there's a program or framework that's been adopted called Housing First. And in one sentence, two sentences or less, that means, like, let's give people who are experiencing chronic homelessness and many complex issues housing first without a lot of other barriers so that they can have a stable, secure place to live. And then we interact with the individual to help them choose from a menu of services to help them remain housed and start to feel connected to community and start to reach some of their goals. So the housing first piece is the key thing. So as funders, Ministry of Health, housing, federal, provincial governments, local governments start reorientating their response to homelessness through that lens, mm-hmm. then it starts to shift the way we're looking at service provision. And then now we're here trying to adjust to that kind of framework and trying to reorder our own services locally to make that higher quality.
Now, as somebody who works on the ground, David Sheffield, who is the coordinator, community director, if you will, for Greenwood Coalition. I mean, you've worked on the ground with people who are dealing with this every single day. And I'm not to diminish the role that you ladies have, obviously, but you work directly with individuals who have lived with, experienced. How has this assistance from the provincial government at the various levels helped you, or how has it hindered you?
I would say that it hasn't, what has happened in recent years hasn't changed. There, we got a mic on. Good. It hasn't changed. The circumstances haven't changed. Things are a little worse now than they were. And in terms of pointing at, you know, what are the reasons for that, there's a range of contributors, and it can be in one community, it can be like we have here, a shortage of housing stock, a shortage of available rental space, and so that puts pressure on, and so you add these other issues that we've been talking about. The homeless hub at York University that studies all this kind of thing, they kind of talk about the three factors that contribute to homelessness, and one is those larger structural factors that we've experienced here, where the economy has shifted, manufacturing has moved out of this area, and so the kind of economic patterns that were here aren't there anymore. So that's one of the factors that happens. Another is sort of the failure of systems. So we have people being released from prison or aging out of children's aid, and there isn't a response there to sort of carry through. And mm-hmm. so that's one of the reasons. And then the others are just the individual situations that could be the illness of an individual, family breakdown, addiction, these kinds of things. And so all of these are contributors, and we really haven't been doing a great job of turning that around. Mm-hmm. in recent years.
How has it been working with the province, though? Because, I mean, I've spoken to Lou Rinaldi about issues of homelessness in the past, and he said one of the biggest struggles he's had as a member of provincial parliament is to convince people outside of Toronto or the other major urban centres that homelessness is, in fact, a reality in rural Ontario. You know, I mean, he had George Smitherman told him once, well, you don't have homelessness in Northumberland. What are you talking about, Lou? And so I think there's part of the problem from what I'm seeing anyway is this huge disconnect between what the government perceives as a problem and what people like yourself are seeing and you ladies as well are seeing every day who are coming to your offices looking for assistance, looking for help, especially in a community like ours where the vacancy rate, I think, is like 0.5%. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, definitely that's an issue here is just the perception of homelessness. And that's one of the reasons that I've been quite enthusiastic about this 20,000 homes project over the past few weeks, because it's drawing some public attention to the need that we have in this community and what has been hidden. And so this study, we were able to talk to over 300 people who are homeless or at risk of losing their housing, and create a picture of what that looks like, because you know how politics works, Dave, and if the people in a community, the people that vote and pay taxes and are active in the community, don't understand what's going on in that community, if it's hidden from them, then you're not going to get political action on that.
Exactly.
And you're able to do that in small towns. In small towns, we like to keep things nice and tidy, and we like to have enough police to keep the streets clean. And if somebody's panhandling, you know, we should deal with that within an hour. And if there's, you know, somebody sleeping on the street, well, we need to move that along. And that's, you know, that's kind of this sort of small town way of thinking. And so to find homelessness, you have to dig deeper here, and that's what this process has been about.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, my guests in the studio are talking about the Northumberland County homeless study that was just released. Carrie Kightley from regional, she's a regional housing coordinator from Forecast. Lisa Horn, director of community and social services for Northumberland, and David Sheffield, the community director, as well as Rob Washburn and I are here. We'll be right back after this break with more of our conversation. By the way, listeners, the lines are open, and the wonderful Joanna is back, so we can take your calls at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. Try and call through the 2-1 number first if you could. We'll be back right after this break.
Hey, Pete, have you time for a quick quiz?
Okay, Andrea.
True or false, your heart will beat 100,000 times a day?
False.
True or false, if you pull out a gray hair, tumor will grow back?
True.
True or false, you'll find out answers to questions like these and a whole lot more every Thursday at 2 p.m. on Living Happily Ever Active.
That's true.
And now you can contact me. Go to postmeridian897.ca and click on to Living Happily Ever Active.
Join us for Living Happily Ever Active Thursdays at 2 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7. Truly local radio.
Come on out to Hometown Bingo. Open every day from 12:30 to 7 p.m. Monday through Wednesday. Thursday to Sunday, 12:30 to 9:45. $2 per paper strips all day Fridays and 7 p.m. daily paper specials. We are located at 884 Division Street. Give us a call at 905-372-5426 or visit us online at hometownbingo.ca. Our license number is 7844.
You can wish it wasn't so, but winter will soon be at your door. Now is the perfect time to ensure your home comfort system is ready. If your furnace is more than 10 years old, it may be time to consider a new one. For a limited time, receive up to $1,500 in cash rebates with the purchase of a new comfort system from Pritchard's Climate Care. Call Pritchard's Climate Care at 905-885-8216 or visit pritchard-mechanical.com. At Pritchard's, we're not just your home climate care experts, we're your neighbors.
Northumberland 89.7 is powered by our volunteers. You can help us continue to be Northumberland's truly local radio station. Contact us by emailing info@northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the big broadcast. You're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat, right here on Northumberland 89.7. We're discussing the Northumberland County Homeless Study. Rob, you have a question.
Yes, I do. I'd like to know, we've talked a bit about the background. We've kind of set the context. Can we now talk about the process of the study? Because I can't imagine how difficult it is to find homeless people, because if you look around, you don't see people, as we were just talking about a minute ago, panhandling or sleeping on benches. So how did you do this study to get the results?
Well, interestingly enough, we joined an alliance of communities across Canada who are looking at ending chronic homelessness. And it's called the 20,000 Homes Campaign under the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness umbrella. And essentially, their goal is to house 20,000 of the most vulnerable homeless people across Canada before July 1st, 2018. And so they have some process in place and a lot of support to help communities start to count and build pictures about what homelessness looks like. And so the key piece that we recognized right away was that hidden piece of homelessness in rural communities. We just can't walk down the street, like down Queen Street, and say, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's just not going to happen. So what we did was we invited as many community partners to the table as possible, food banks and community agencies and health providers and social service providers. And we said to them, where can we encounter people? Where can we connect with people? And we also invited people from the community and said, we want volunteers. We want your expertise. If you're at a food program or a food bank or a student or anybody who's interested in this idea, mm-hmm. we wanted to invite as many people to the table as possible, train up our volunteers and professionals to use the tool, the survey tool, and then send them out into as many locations as possible. And I think we had more than 45 locations across a one-week period, November 14th, the week of November 14th. We had many locations, people walking through streets and neighborhoods where they knew they could find people, but also food programs and outreach workers and hospitals and mental health providers, etc., so that we had as many contact points throughout Northumberland mm-hmm. County as possible. And we really relied on the relationships that those agencies had already built with people. Like, you know, I come into Northumberland and I'm one person and I can't do this kind of work myself, because we interviewed 304 people. So what we did was we said, hey, Dave, at Greenwood Coalition, what can you do to help us? What is your advice? We did the same with all of our community partners to see where we could land in terms of contact points.
What about those people that are couch surfing, though? I mean, they may be working. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I know people myself who are working. They currently don't have a place to live, but they've got a job. And they're staying at a friend's house on the couch, you know, for a couple of weeks. Maybe they'll stay at another friend's house. How do we get those people engaged?
Well, interestingly enough, we had a huge social media presence. So we advertised on television and radio and in the paper, on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, that kind of thing, to get the word out about what we were doing. Every participant who filled out the survey with us got a $10 gift card to thank them for their time. And we made it possible for people to fill out the survey by phone as well. So they may have heard about it in the paper and they called the number, filled out a survey with someone over the line, and then we sent them a gift card to say, thanks for your time, we really appreciate it. Because not only do we want to survey people and find out what their needs are to help us create a picture and understanding, but we also want to collect their personal data so we can connect them to better services and opportunities to help stabilize their housing.
So what were some of the results then? What did you start to find once you started to get all this data in front of you and correlate it?
So we kind of had two categories of people: people who are acutely homeless, so people who are unsheltered, living in emergency shelters, couch surfing, living rough outside, and then we had folks who are at imminent risk of losing their housing. And so in the homelessness category, we interviewed 59 individuals and 18 families, including 26 children. So that surprised us, because in other surveys that I've participated in, we haven't found that many families. And so to see that there were 18 families, 26 children, acutely homeless in Northumberland County is something to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. In the at-risk category, we surveyed 179 individuals and 48 families, which included a group of 68 children. So those numbers right there are astonishing. When we start to dig deeper into the data, which we hope to do over the next month and create a well-detailed report in the early 2017, we'll start to uncover what some of the specific issues are in those populations.
So you said you were astonished. What is astonishing about this for those of us who don't work in the area and may not put it in context of other things. What's astonishing about it?
Well, I think it's astonishing that we found so many people. It's astonishing that we had 85 volunteers who were willing to help us find those people. Mm-hmm. But then when we start to look at what the needs of all these individuals are, we start to see that, you know, there's families with three kids who are homeless. They don't have a place to live, and they aren't connected to services to help them resolve that issue. So how do we prevent that issue from going on for many months and many years?
Is this just the tip of the iceberg, though? Because typically in studies like this, you'll find these numbers, but oftentimes this is just the beginning. You know, is it possible that there are twice as many people out there in this situation?
Certainly, we acknowledge that we got a good sample of people, mm-hmm. but we also know that we didn't find people.
Right.
We know that there'll be, you know, 10 people over the next month that show up at Dave's door to say, you know, I'm homeless, I don't know what I'm doing, or I don't know how to resolve this, and he'll be able to connect them to this process as well. They say, like in terms of research in Canada, they say that just less than 1% of the Canadian population experiences homelessness. So if we apply that formula to the Northumberland County population, I think the number is about 800 people, if that was true in Northumberland. So if we surveyed 300 people, that means we got a fairly good sampling, but we don't know what the actual number is.
So that was one of my questions, was how do you extrapolate the data out? Can you do that, or is it just stand alone and we just know that of these 300, this is what the situation is? Or can you project out to say what it might be?
There isn't a reliable formula to be able to project out, but I think what we can do is make some assumptions about within the 300 people that we were able to survey. We learned a few things. We learned that 6% of the population were veterans. We learned that 27% of the individuals surveyed were youth between the age of 16 and 24. So as we look at those generalizations, if we expand our population, if we expanded the number of people surveyed, I don't think those percentages and notable populations would change. What this helps us to do is it gives us a clear enough picture that we can start to reorder our services so that we are providing things that make sense for those populations specifically.
Because that was one of the things that sort of struck me when you said that the family hadn't accessed any services. Mm-hmm. And I guess, Lisa, why would there be such a gap? How could it be possible that a family wouldn't know where to go to get help?
Well, and I think that's part of what we want to learn from this exercise, is that it's an opportunity for us to start examining. You know, we think that we're out there, we think that we're available, we think that we're reaching all the right populations, but we really don't know. And we recognize that we can probably be doing a better job. And maybe it's the education with other service providers, it's the linkages, it's building those networks. So those are good questions. You know, how are we going to get people connected, and how do we make sure that the right services are out there, and how do we better understand each other's needs and mandates, and how we can work together? And so it's been a really exciting learning opportunity, because we're expanding our own networks and social services mm-hmm. as we're doing that. So that's sort of where we're trying to move in that direction, because we want to know, how do we connect people to services, and why aren't they accessing them if they're available to them, and how do we remove the barriers that are keeping them from accessing those services?
How much do you think is a perception out there by people who find themselves in this situation that they don't have anyone to turn to? I mean, if you don't have a permanent address, you can't get social assistance, a lot of people believe. Or if you don't have a permanent address, you can't get access to this service or that service. So because they don't have one, they just assume, well, I've got to find an address first before I can get that started. Is that a reality, or is that just a myth?
I think that there is a reality to that. I think that there's a lot of people that don't understand what the services are. I mean, I think part of this exercise, too, is learning how to system navigate. It's very complicated, and as mm-hmm. you start looking at it from the perspective of somebody who's trying to access their services, when at times we as service providers get confused, we can only imagine what it would be like. So part of the goal would be to, how do we make this simpler? How do we make sure that that when somebody comes in our door, whatever door that is, that they're getting the same kind of level of service, they're getting the same access to information. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we strengthen that social infrastructure so that people know where they can go and how they can get that service?
I was really struck, too, by the fact that most of the people that you surveyed came from Cobourg. There was a sort of a large percentage of homeless people in Cobourg, and I wonder why that was.
Well, I think I should clarify that. That's a good, great question. Where we did the survey, so where we filled out the survey, is the location where it is indicated on the survey, right? So Coburg was the central place for people to call in to have their survey done over the phone. There was a number of community events and agencies located in Coburg that did the surveys, whether over the phone or in their agencies. So it kind of skews the data a little bit because we aren't asking people for their address or where they live most commonly because they don't have an address, right? So it's really hard to capture where people are coming from. So it looks like it's overpopulated in Coburg.
The other thing that was interesting was that there seemed to be more women than men. Can you maybe shed any light on that?
I don't know if I can. That actually surprised me a bit because usually in some of the studies that I've read across Canada, it's a fairly balanced number or males kind of outweigh females. But here in Northumberland, in most of our categories, we had a larger group of women. So I don't know the answer to that question. We haven't dug deep enough into the data yet, and we haven't gone back to the people experiencing homelessness to say, okay, tell us more. And because that is our intention. We want to go back and learn more and make sure each of the individuals we surveyed will be connected to services and have opportunities as they become available.
So, Dave, maybe you could shed some light on this from the ground perspective.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that come to mind, but I was just thinking what Carrie said about it not being clear why there's more women, but it may also connect to that the other piece that confuses us is why are so many families, why did we find so many families? All of those families were led by a woman. And so they're single families led by a woman, and so in the homeless category, and so those two things may correlate. That may not be an answer to that.
Can I just interject real quickly, because I wonder if how much of that has to do with the fact that Coburg is sort of the hub of Northumberland County. It's where the county seat is. It's where the Service Canada and Service Ontario offices are most easily accessible. Is that what's drawing people to here, hoping that they can get a more direct access to services?
Yeah. If people are street homeless, they tend to gravitate toward Coburg because you have to walk to services, and we don't have equal distribution of services around town. I mean, Greenwood's work is based in Port Hope, and that's one of my frustrations that to get services, people have to go elsewhere, and the only we have one type of shelter, and the only one that we have is in Coburg, and
right.
so that accounts for some of that. I think your question about why aren't people accessing services, I think is an interesting one that has some layers to it. But our experience with people who are street homeless and that couch surfing category, the most vulnerable people in the population, often have experienced early trauma, and there's a consistent theme of early trauma and some of the responses to that, mental health and addiction issues. And so if you put your sort of look through that lens at why aren't people accessing services, often there's fear and distrust of offices, of authorities, that kind of thing, and you try to figure it out on your own. Sometimes you just, we encounter people who are agoraphobic, have anxieties. It's just really difficult for them to get there. I mean, that's why the kind of work that we do evolves, because there are people who aren't accessing, and so we go to where they are.
Well, we talk about the groups that have been identified. Was there anywhere in this study where you were able to identify people who are like one paycheck away from homelessness? I mean, there's a lot of people out there right now who are working. It's precarious labor right now. It's a just-in-time kind of economy where companies let people go because they don't need them right now, but they'll need them in a few months. So you've got a lot of people right now that are sort of working precariously. And, I mean, if they miss a paycheck, that's it. They're out on the street. Were they included in this study?
Definitely. And that's the at-risk of homelessness population that we talked about. And so those are the folks who have maybe bad credit because of that cycle of sometimes employed, sometimes not, don't have a good our housing history, so they can't use their last landlord because they didn't pay their last month's rent, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so their risk increases as time goes on because that bad history increases. But also we found a lot of people who were living with very little in their savings account. So they had $4 reported that they had $4 to their name and their mm-hmm. next check is coming in 3 weeks, mm-hmm. right? So when you start to look at the amount of stress that that family or individual would be under, that's when you start to see what the impact of poverty and housing insecurity has on individuals and families.
Is there any way that you can measure the severity of homelessness in a particular area, or how do you frame that so that we can get the sense of urgency within the study?
Well, the tool that we used is called the VI SPDAT, which is a long name for it's a short prioritization tool. And that tool allows us to score people based on how they report in the survey. So we measure health history, housing and homelessness history, risk taking behavior, and some a measurement around daily functioning and socialization. And so it lands us at a score. And so we can, based on how people report, it allows us to land them on, okay, this individual is fairly low need, this individual is higher need, and then here's our top kind of highest need people who need the most intensive supports in order to stabilize. And so we don't just have some information about individuals. We have a way to score their level of need, and it gives us a picture of what kind of services
we should.
And
what did you find, and what was the result? How many people are in severe?
In terms of severe need, of the single homeless individuals that we surveyed, 30% of that population was in severe need, so in terms of needing permanent supportive housing. And then in our family population, 53% of the families that we surveyed were in need of permanent supportive housing.
And how serious is that, like contextually?
They have many layers concerns that are happening. So often physical health, mental health, and some concerns with their children.
Should
that
we
are
be worried
layered.
That 50% of the families that you surveyed are in severe
yes.
need? Okay, that's what
yep.
I was looking for. Sorry.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation on Northumberland's homeless study. And my guests will be right back, listeners. You're listening to Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
Hi, this is David
and Daryl from Northumberland 89.7.
We are proud to announce that in conjunction with Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center, our first annual toy and gift drive.
Hey Dave, how do people help with this great cause?
Well, it's simple, Daryl. Just bring any new unwrapped toy or gift to the station at 1000 Elgin Street West during business hours, or anytime to Bodylogic's Fitness at 726 Ontario Street in Coburg, Spark Smart Toys for Cool Kids at 30 King Street West in Coburg, or Ed White's Appliances at 51 Mill Street in Port Hope by December 20th.
What about gift cards, Dave?
Absolutely, Daryl. Those are essential.
At this time of year, let's help do our part in making this Christmas season a merry one for everyone. The Northumberland 89.7 Toy and Gift Drive in support of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center.
Hi, it's Debbie from Beachcomber Hot Tubs. Beachcomber is now your source for helium balloons. We have balloons for any occasion, from Christmas parties to baby showers, birthdays, anniversaries, and more. Our helium balloons are an easy decorating idea to make any get-together more festive. And we can even wrap your special gift inside a balloon for an extra surprise. Beachcomber, 985 Elgin Street, West Coburg. Beachcomber, connecting family, friends, and loved ones with balloons.
Hi, this is Lane with What's Happening This Week. Out in Welcome, we have the life-size nativity scene across from the New Hope United Church, put together in part thanks to Donna Brimacombe, who will be holding an open house that will take place December the 11th, the 16th, and the 17th. She is at 3286 Fourth Line Road, admission by donation, and she donates all of her donation money to the Port Hope United Church. Thursday night, we have a girls' night out at the Farmer's Save in Port Hope. It's the boutique from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, we have the Farmer's Market Christmas market from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. at the Port Hope Rec Center at 62 McCall Street. In Port Hope at the Public Library on Saturday, we have a holiday open house. Story, songs, crafts, refreshments. 10:15, we have Christmas songs with Ted Staunton. 10:30, Santa's there. 11 o'clock, illustrator Bill Slavin. 12 p.m., the library's own Ed Greenwood with one of his own personal stories. If you have an event coming up, you can contact us at info@northumberland897.ca. This is Lane White with What's Happening.
Northumberland 89.7 is powered by our volunteers. You can help us continue to be Northumberland's truly local radio station. Contact us by emailing info@northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the big broadcast. We're talking about the Northumberland Homeless Study. Joining me in the studio are Kira Kightley. She is the Regional Housing Coordinator for Forecast. Lisa Horn, the Director of Community and Social Services here for Northumberland County, correct?
Correct.
And David Sheffield, Community Director for Greenwood Coalition. And as always, Rob Washburn, Professor of E-Journalism at Loyalist College. Rob, you have the floor.
Well, thank you so much. Just to follow up on that VSPDAT statistic, that sounds like a pretty technical tool. And yet what we're talking about are human beings. I mean, should we be concerned that we're starting to just sort of jam people into a database and crunch them through, or are we still remembering that we're dealing with people?
The VSPDAT tool is much like a triage nurse in an emergency department. So you come through the door, you meet with someone, they gather a little bit of information with you, and then they learn how to direct you somewhere. And that's exactly how we're using the tool. We're collecting a little bit of basic information about people so that we can direct them to the right services. Our intention going forward, we collected personal information and contact information mm-hmm. from people who were willing to share that with us. Mm-hmm. And our intention going forward is to meet with and connect with all of those individuals that we surveyed so that we can get them closer to services and share what's currently available and new opportunities as they become available.
So it sounds to me like the exact opposite of what you think.
So I was going to, but I'll ask somebody who's on the ground though, David. Have we been in through this process? Have we lost the human element to this issue?
Part of the reason that I joined in with this process, it's been very collaborative. It's been a great experience to work on this, and part of what I took from this is the human components, if you will. I'm not really a systems kind of person, and I interact with people most of the time. What I saw in this, as Carrie mentioned, that this is for the first time a by name registry, where there's now a person with a story that we're working with. This isn't a bird count. This is a relationship that it develops as we sit down and share that information. And the other is the prioritization of this too. That we've got the most. We're dealing with some of the most vulnerable people, and so they should get priority. But the other thing that we experienced through this. The 85 volunteers that were participating in this, we heard from them a number of times, and a lot of them were just people that wanted to help out and do something in the community, and for them who might be typical middle class kind of person in the community. Sitting down with a person who's struggling, who's homeless, who's lived through a bunch of pieces of life, and to hear that story for the first time, I heard from some of those volunteers that was a very moving experience, that this was a powerful thing, and a number of those people have indicated that they would like to continue to be part of this process and to be part of a community response to solving this.
That's kind of leads to my next question, which was how has this study impacted not just the people who volunteered, but the people who actually participated? Do you feel as though that they came away? Because one of the problems when you're homeless, of course, is that you're feeling like it's just me. I'm all alone. I got nobody to turn to. And it's the same thing as any group when you find out that there are more people than just you involved in this. How has that been an impact, if at all, for the people that were surveyed?
I don't think we can say that there's been a significant impact yet because we've just surveyed. Right. So now we're at the spot where we're looking at what information we collected and collaboratively trying to redesign a response. And so hopefully that means that a year from now you can ask us that question and we'll be able to say that these are the impacts, this is how we're measuring change, right, et cetera.
Well, one of the perceptions out there, and again, I'm going to quote Ben Carson, who's just been named the HUD director in the U.S., who believes that that poverty is something that people have by choice, that people choose to be poor. Is that something that maybe you had some volunteers that were jumping on board with this program to try and get to know what the situation was, and maybe that perception's been dispelled? I mean, are there still people out there who think poverty is a choice?
Certainly.
Yeah.
I think that there's a stigma that's attached to poverty. There's an old school view that, you know, just get a job or just stop using drugs or, you know, just like resolve your mental illness. I think that those are like longstanding stigmas that affect our society in general. Are we improving the way we think about homelessness and poverty through this initiative? I would say yes, because the more we kind of collaborate together, the more we learn about the issue and the more we change and frame the conversation. Mm-hmm. Our volunteers were fantastic. Even for some of the volunteers who are new to this field in the sense of this community, they were really passionate about listening to people and hearing their stories. So they came back to us saying, I talked to this woman who has three kids and shared a bit of their story, you know, and we're really shocked that that kind of poverty happens in Canada.
Right.
And that happens in Northumberland County. So I think those kind of shifts will naturally happen with the more contact you have with the population to humanize it.
On that note, we're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, more of our conversation on homelessness here in Northumberland County. Yes, it is real.
Hi, I'm Pete Hamilton, and I'm responsible for Mystic. Have you ever noticed how one person's noise is another person's music, is another person's background sound? That's what the Mystic is about. Adventures in sound, music, and noise. You can hear it every Saturday at 9 in the evening, and it's repeated the following Friday at 2 in the morning by Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Do you enjoy getting out and meeting people? Northumberland's truly local radio station, 89.7, yes, this station, is looking for enthusiastic individuals to help us sell advertising. We would like somebody who's able to put in a couple of days a week meeting and speaking with the local businesses about how Northumberland 89.7 can help deliver new customers to their business. For more information and to apply for the position, please send your resume to info@northumberland897.ca. Attention, Joanne Johnson.
Missed your favorite program on Northumberland 89.7? Don't worry, you can catch up on news, events, and missed shows on our website at northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back to the big broadcast. I want to remind the listeners out there, the guests in the studio, David Sheffield, Community Director for Greenwood Coalition. I got to say, David, you do a kick-ass job over there. I really do. I want to thank you for all the work you do over there. Lisa Horn, again, you do just commendable work with community and social services. I know having dealt with the community and social services and all of the struggles that you guys have to deal with over there, it's not easy, but you do a yeoman service. And Carrie Kitely, Regional Housing Coordinator for Forecast. Again, you do an incredible job. And I think the work that you do is probably overlooked because of just so many other things that are out there. Rob?
Yeah, I'm curious. When you had your press conference, neither politician showed up. They sent representatives to the event. Does that concern anybody around the table that the politicians couldn't actually be bothered to come out? And are you worried about their support and what they're going to be doing for us as we go forward?
I think I can speak a little bit to that. I know after that meeting, we'd had a lot of a conversation back and forth with Lou Rinaldi's office, and they were very much interested in being able to be present and to be heard. Lou, because of the responsibilities that he has, was unable to come that day. But we did have a meeting with him aside from that afterwards, and we were able to have an audience with him and share the results of the survey and have that one-on-one conversation. And from that, he was very excited to be able to look to our community as being perhaps something that he could share with his senior advisors and policymakers, because again, the rural presence is something we really need to start looking at and changing those myths and what does it look like. And this survey gave us an opportunity to really look at our community being the rural area and not your traditional larger urban centers. So I wasn't concerned at all because we've had a lot of engagement. And the same thing with Kim Rudd. We've been able to engage with her on a number of occasions in the opportunity when we have an initiative to be able to go and speak with them. They're open and they're wanting to hear more. So our commitment to them is to be continuing to share all of these stories that we have.
How shocked was Lou by the numbers? I mean, I know he's been aware of the situation, and as I told you, the conversation he's had with other members of provincial parliament, but how shocked was he by these numbers?
I would say that we, again, had a lot of discussion around the families. Mm-hmm. I think for all of us, that was something that we weren't really expecting and the number of children impacted. So that really speaks to where we need to start thinking differently as well.
So then what is the call to action? Can we start making recommendations yet, or where are we with that?
Well, maybe I'll let Carrie sort of speak to that a little bit, because she's been working with the data and working with the advisory committee a lot closer than I have at the moment. So I know that they've started some next steps. So,
yeah, I think our next steps are definitely how do we align resources alongside of the people whom we surveyed, and do them in a way, like align them in a way that makes sense for individuals and fiscally makes sense for the county. And I think that those are our next steps. There's some new resources that will be available over the next year or two that we will be able to pointedly attach to homelessness. But there's also a lot of willingness from our community partners to really look at our response and improving our response within the resources that are already here.
So as a community activist, Dave, on the optimism scale, 10 being super duper optimistic, rainbows and unicorns, and zero being it couldn't get darker. Where do you put, how do you see?
Well, higher than five for sure, Robert. One of the things that I'm seeing right now, we got a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world at some high levels that is very discouraging. But one of the things that I'm seeing is at the very local level, there seems to be a revitalization, an interest in working together, trying to solve some things at that scale. And so that encourages me that something can happen. We were involved in a meeting last week looking at housing alternatives in the community. And at that meeting, there were 30-odd people there. There were people from agencies, people like us there. There were people, just random public people. There were developers, and there were three homeless people there. And they were all talking about alternatives to housing and coming up with solutions and suggestions. And I just sort of see that energy as being the way forward.
Well, we know that on January 12th, the member of provincial parliament, Lou Rinaldi, is going to be holding a first consultation, if you will, with regard to the possibility of a guaranteed basic income. And I want to ask the panel here, what impact do they feel that will have, if any at all, quite frankly, on dealing with this issue, given the current economic situation we're seeing? I mean, as I said earlier, rents in this area are pretty high. It's pretty much the same. I could have gotten a two-bedroom apartment at Bloor and Danforth, or Danforth and Broadview, for the same price I got for a two-bedroom apartment here. And yet, we're not in Toronto.
Yep. Absolutely. There's the distribution of wealth in this country is a problem, and it's getting worse. And so we need to be looking at that in a different way. There are a lot of complex layers. This look at the guaranteed basic income, I think, is timely. I think it's supported on the right end of the spectrum and the left end of the spectrum for some different reasons. I think we're going to see some form of that come to fruition. I think that that as communities get engaged in this and learn more about it, we've had this for years in the form of the old age security check, and this is just an expansion of that, a way of redistributing wealth and addressing some of the issues of poverty. The biggest, one of the biggest costs that we have as taxpayers is health care, and the biggest contributor to poor health is income levels. And so that hits the food need, that hits the housing need and across the board.
Lisa, you work with Community and Social Services. What are you hearing from your colleagues and folks at work about the possibility of a basic guaranteed income? Would that make your work easier, or is it going to make it even harder?
Well, I think from the role that I take, it's very exciting, because it's not, as Director of Social Services, I'm not just looking at the income piece. We're looking at the child and family services. We're looking at income support, employment. So I get excited, because from where I sit in all the different ministries and all the different areas, there's a lot of different conversation that's happening. And I would say basic income, at least examining it, looking at it, considering it, is an important part of where we need to go around modernization and transformation of all of the systems. And it's a really interesting time, because a lot of things are aligning in a lot of the other ministries as well. There's a lot of investment with the Ministry of Ed around Ontario Early Years Child and Family Centers, where it's about early learning, but it's going to be bigger than that. It's not just about early learning. It's going to be about community hubs and bringing families in and providing them those services. services and creating that one door where people can come through and everybody's treated the same and everybody gets the same level of services. It's, you know, community hubs. It's human services integration. It's the poverty reduction mandate that we're hearing from all of the different, you know, Ministry of Housing and all the different ministries. They're all looking to try and modernize and make efficient and remove barriers. That's what I'm hearing at the higher levels, and mm-hmm. that excites me. But how that translates locally is that when I look at our county strategic plan, there is a big piece of that in that plan around thriving and inclusive communities. So we have a council that has mandated to our department, delegated to the Department of Community and Social Services, the ability to go out into the community and start looking at poverty reduction with our partners and looking at index of well-being and looking at strengthening social infrastructures. And I think that's really important, an important commitment from our local community as well, local councillors and elected officials, that they see this work as important too. So it gives us, I mean, it gives us the mandate to be able to say, let's see what we can do with the changes that are happening.
Well, I want to thank all of my guests for being here this afternoon. We've been discussing the homelessness strategy and the information here in the county. By the way, this the homelessness study is available online. I will see if I can't do a cut and paste, set it up on Twitter. Thanks to Lisa Horn, Director of Community and Social Services for Northumberland County, Carrie Keitley, Regional Housing Coordinator Forecast, and David Sheffield, Community Director of Greenwood Coalition. Very happy to have had you guys in the studio. Rob Washburn, thanks for setting this up. Rob's a great producer, folks. Here is Sarah McLaughlin. I'll be home for Christmas in honor of those folks out there who may not be. I'm Dave Glover.
Christmas.